those nights when you've got no lights. The check.
The most exciting thing you can start a show with.
Coming live from the 2SER studios.
This is a great show.
Across the park, 2SER.
And just go for a swim, but like deep.
Come on in, meatball.
Testicles. I'm pointing at the doggy.
Gummy more.
Pretty awesome.
No worries, I have good.
Which part of that was
becoming? There's a real problem with that. Bloody.
Never walk alone.
I can stand the prick.
Oh, bloody bird.
Let's not do this.
Oh, the corner injury. She got a corner injury.
Hello and welcome to Across the Park, a multi-award-winning sports show on 2SER where normally I would begin with an introduction that makes no sense or is some kind of topical news story worked into a badly performed joke, but this week I'm way too excited to actually start the show, so we are just going to get straight into it. Okay, I'm Joel Kassam and I can admit honestly that I'm a bit of a cricket tragic, and I'm also joined by the following tragics. Up first is a woman who knows a little bit about cricket. It's Gabby Morris.
Hello, hello, hello.
Hello. I'm going to keep going. Also joining us is a man who knows a little bit more about cricket. It's Mick Rad.
Hey. Happy 101.
Yeah, thank you very
Joel,
much.
Joel, big deep breath in, big okay, here breath I go. Out.
And also here is a man who probably knows a tiny bit more about cricket than the three of us, mostly because he is about to release his new book, The Spirit of Cricket India, and I guess because he was once the captain of Australia and is one of the greatest players who have ever played the game. I still can't believe I'm going to say this. It's Steve Waugh! Hi, Steve.
Thank you. That's a unique introduction.
We told you it was a bit of a silly show, but yeah. You know, we weren't sure how to prepare yourself.
No, it's all good.
Welcome, Steve. Thanks so much for joining us. It's really exciting to have you on the line.
No problem.
Look, we all know you as one of the greatest cricketers to have ever played, not just in Australia, around the world. When you were a kid, though, how did you get into it? Were you into other sports as well, or was it just always going to be cricket?
No, it was any sport possible, really, and even in primary school, it was any sport I could sign up for to get a day out of school, really. That was I was up for it. So, but yeah, the four boys growing up in the western suburbs of Sydney, where our life was revolved around sport. It was basically 24/7. You know, the moment we woke up, we thought about it, we played sport, and went to sleep, dreamed about playing sport the next day, up again, doing the same thing. So, it was just the way it was back in the I guess the 70s and 80s, you know, playing in the backyard with your mates and on holidays, having a game of cricket, game of soccer, game of footy, game of tennis. It was just constant.
And when did you, like, how did you just go, okay, I want to make this my life? Or was there a moment or a time when you just kind of went, cricket is the one for me, I'm going to commit to this?
Look, I didn't really see it as a profession. Back those days, there wasn't a lot of money in sport, but I just loved playing whatever I could. So it was just something I enjoyed. And got to the age of 16 or 17, I was playing semi-professional soccer for Sydney, Croatia, and getting serious with the cricket, getting picked sort of in first and second grade at Bankstown. And I think my soccer coach sort of made the decision for me because he said, look, I can't pick you in first grade unless you commit fully to training. And it was sort of during the cricket season, or the start of the cricket season. I said, well, I can't do that because I'm a cricket training. So I had to really make a choice then. And that's when, probably age of 17, I chose cricket over soccer or football.
And I guess having all that those siblings, the brothers, to compete against would have just kept that competitive spirit going, see who can one-up each other in each sport.
Oh, there's definitely a lot of that. It was the hardest games were in the backyard against the brothers. So test matches seemed pretty easy when you got to that level because you've been well grounded before that in, there's tough contests, and there was never an inch sort of given between the four of us in the backyard. So we were used to sort of competing and playing it pretty tough.
Did you see, when I was growing up, I would play in the backyard with my brother and my sister and, you know, you'd fight over who's going to be Steve Waugh. Did you have people that you sort of looked up to?
I guess so, yeah. Look, I remember playing in the backyard and had the transistor radio on the back porch, and Alan McGilroy used to be the commentator for test matches back in those days, and he'd listen to Australia and England, and you'd imagine yourself playing for Australia. So we'd toss the bat, hills or valleys, wasn't a coin, and I guess whoever won that toss would always be Australia, and you'd play that imaginary test match in the backyard while the commentary was blaring out on the radio. So that was, we were dreaming of playing for Australia, but you never actually think it's going to happen.
It's just that dream, and then it's that passion that really gets you there.
Joel is just red with excitement, like, just at the thought of it.
You didn't quite make it, Joel. It's all right, you know.
I'm going to get there, thank you.
Oh, okay.
I'll make it. Can you remember being selected then for the first time?
Yeah, I think your first step along the way has been picked for first grade for Bankston, which is my local team, and I thought, geez, it can't get much better than that. You're playing first grade cricket at 17, and then things went pretty well. I got picked for New South Wales at 19, which is, you sort of take a bit of a gulp and think, am I good enough for this? And then all of a sudden, I'm picked for Australia at 20, and that was it was pretty scary, really, to look back at it. It was was I out of my depth? Was I ready for all the media and all the speculation and all the scrutiny? So that was probably, no, I wasn't ready for that. So that was, it was challenging times the first couple of years playing for Australia, because I was trying to find my feet in the team, where I guess trying to establish themselves under the captaincy of Alan Border, who was sort of thrust into that role when Kim Hughes resigned. So there was a bit of turmoil in Australian cricket for a couple of years.
Well, how did you find that then? How did you finally get past that point where, okay, I'm now a little bit comfortable with media and being a bit of a personality?
Yeah, look, it was a gradual process. I can't say I was really comfortable with it for a number of years. I sort of accepted it and put up with it, but there wasn't really any coaching back in these days either. No one really gave any media training. You had to sort of find out for yourself and watch how other people did it. So it was, we certainly weren't as well prepared back then as the players are now. And I always look back and think, geez, I was way out of my depth in a lot of areas. I somehow managed to survive. I might look calmer above the water, but underneath I was paddling pretty hard. So, yeah.
And you've won a plethora of awards. You were named Australian of the Year back in 2004. Big congrats. It's pretty amazing. But I'm actually really interested in one big award that you won in 2005, Australian Father of the Year. I always think about, how much do you just remind your kids of that constantly?
They wouldn't listen if I reminded them, so it doesn't matter. I think those awards are really, I think you pick because you're a representation of the people out there. It's not so much, I don't take it seriously as I was the best father in Australia or the Australian of the Year, but I guess people recognise you for certain things and you sort of represent them. But, it was one of those funny ones. If I asked my kids now, they probably wouldn't even know I got it. So,
I feel like that would be my dad's number one thing every Father's Day.
You know, I think I might start reminding him, actually. Yeah. I'm glad you brought that up.
Yeah, I might have to milk it. Get some extra presents.
For sure.
One of the things that I think all Australian cricket fans remember is your love of India when you play the game. And we used to see stories of you going back to India in between tours. You'd go and visit the different shelters and the slums. And, you know, for people in Australia who didn't know much about India, I think maybe they didn't realise just how big a deal that was, because people weren't just walking around India and going out of the hotel rooms back then. So you must have some really fond memories of that when you started really discovering India.
Yeah, look, I was lucky enough to be on early tours with people like Mike Whitney, who was a real adventurer and explorer and used to get out of the hotel and do things. And I had sort of a kindred spirit in Gavin Robertson and went on a few tours. So, I liked to get out of the hotel and see what was going on and walk around the streets and meet people and take photographs and just learn a bit about what the place I was in. Because we had a great privilege to travel all these amazing countries on cricket tours, and we had a bit of time off to... And I sort of said to myself, let's get out and see what the world's all about and try and learn a few things and be curious, ask a few questions and be inquisitive. So that was something in my nature. And then photography, I guess, was a natural extension of that.
Your new book, The Spirit of Cricket India, is this when that sort of started, when all the way back then? Is that when you thought, I could actually do something with photos from here because this place is beautiful and it's got this, like this...
I was always interested in photography and always would take a camera with me and generally sit in the front seat on the bus and look out the window and see what was going on and take it all in. But on international cricket tours, you're pretty much airport, hotel, ground and just repeat the process day after day. So you don't get many days off where you can actually go out and see the real India or the real Pakistan or the real Sri Lanka. And I tried to do as much as I could, but I was sort of frustrated in a lot of ways that, that we were there, but we couldn't really go out and see it. And in the back of my mind was going back one day to sort of get a bus and just drive wherever we could and stop whenever we wanted and take photos of impromptu cricket games or something and saw that sort of got me interested in taking a photograph. And this was the opportunity for 17 days to there were certain things that we set up beforehand, but at other times we just said, we'll just stop the bus when we see something, go out and take a photograph. So I guess it probably was in the seed was planted the first time I went to India, but it took probably 30 years for that to sort of come to fruition.
And this book, is, The Spirit of Cricket India, is 300 pages of epic, beautiful photos. And you went with photographer Trent Park.
Yep.
So did you guys come together? I mean, it was only 18 days, but you packed in so much. And that's what this book really highlights, just stunning photos from all over. How did you guys, what was your plan around that? What was the sort of goal and what were you trying to achieve? I mean, it's a lot to do.
Yeah, look, I've known Trent for a long time. He's been on a number of tours with me. Obviously, as a photographer in the early years, and he's gone on to become probably one of Australia's best ever photographers. He's actually the only Australian ever to be invited into the Magnum Photo Agency in France. So he's an amazing photographer and a good mate of mine. And I wanted to take photographs that people would be surprised with. And I thought, I've got to progress from setting on the automatic setting and learning how to use shutter speed and aperture and ISO and all these technical terms to try and take photos using the manual setting, and I thought I need someone to help me. And so I rang up Trent and said, mate, do you mind coming on this trip with me to India? And I knew he'd be up for the adventure, and he was incredible, just sitting beside him each day. And we took photographs from 6 in the morning to sometimes 8 or 9 o'clock at night for 17 days in a row.
Yeah.
And I had a privilege of just learning off Trent.
And I think that's what's so great about this book, is that you can see Trent taking photos of you, obviously playing cricket in community, but then also there's shots of him taking photos of you taking photos, and then we get to see your photos. So there's all these different, like, really fascinating different angles and point of views, which I think was really nice touch to the photo series.
Thanks. Yeah, look, and Trent, and so his photographs are on a different level. I just was in awe of the way he thought about photographs, and I learned so much in that short period of time about how important light is to photographs.
And yeah,
capturing the mood and attitude of people and the emotion, and trying to get the moment and be in technical. I guess in cricket analogy, setting a field and then setting a plan, then hopefully putting that into motion and making things happen. So as a photographer, you've got to sort of see potentially what might happen, get ahead of the curve, and then and wait and be patient, but, and try and capture that moment with some emotion in it.
Oh, and you definitely did that. There's some shots you have in Dharavi, which when I was in Mumbai, I went to Dharavi as well. It's this amazing, huge slum in Mumbai, houses a million people, and walking in there is quite awe-inspiring. Mm. But just also meeting people and talking to them and finding out what sort of trades go on in there. And when you walked in, I mean, as Steve Waugh, did people sort of double take and go, wait up, what's Steve Waugh? That's Steve Waugh. Like, I mean, obviously it's been a few years since you played, but you must have just had people going, is this real?
Yeah. It's a bit like that, particularly a place like that where they don't often see so-called celebrities or cricket players, because I think if an Indian player went there, they'd cause a stampede or a riot. And, whilst they recognise me, that's not quite the same level. But I did have security around me, and I really good with the people, and the main thing was that they knew that I was there to try and capture India in a really positive light, and to find out what the spirit of cricket was. And at the end of the day, we'd always have a game of cricket after taking the photograph, so it sort of made everyone happy, and they loved that, and I enjoyed it as well. So it was mainly I wanted to capture them in the natural element, not have too many setup photos. It was more about actually what was unfolding in front of me, and sometimes that was challenging, but at the end of the day, they were very respectful as well.
In the photos, I mean, as a poor cricketer myself, playing in the lowest level you could possibly think of, and even lower than that, we often play on fields that overlap each other. But in this book, there are games that are almost on top of each other, and that's just commonplace there in India, is it?
Yeah, it is. It's a sight to behold. You know, on the maidans in Mumbai, there's the Oval Maidan and the Azad Maidan. That's where Sachin Tendulkar learned his craft. And wow. Really interesting that we did an interview in relation to this book, and he said that because he was growing up playing with thousands of cricketers on these fields, and it was really hard to find a gap. When he got to the international level, there was only 11 players in the opposition. He found that the gaps were really easy to hit to. So that was the way that it taught him to play for the gaps. So, and that's very true, because there's hundreds and thousands of cricketers sometimes playing 10, 20 games, and they're all interwoven, intertwined, and I just looked at it and I thought, they're like flying bats. No one crashes into each other. They must have like sonar that
it's amazing.
Sort of detects where the ball's going, because someone will hit a ball up in the air and someone will run from 40 metres away and dodge 20 fielders and take the catch. It was just incredible to watch, and I just sat there transfixed, and really it brought me back to the very essence of the game and why people love cricket, because it's just this incredible sport that you're not sure what's going to happen, but it keeps drawing you back just to see how good you can get.
You mentioned Sachin Tendulkar, and there's a lovely bit in the book where the both of you meet and go to see a man who's just about to turn 100. How did that come about?
Well, he did a bit of research. I did some research here, and we also had a guy in India who was looking for potential stories and come across this guy who was about to become the who was the oldest first-class cricketer in India, was about to have his 100th birthday. And unfortunately, since that photograph was taken, he passed away. But he was just a really nice man. His wife was still alive. She was 94 years of age, and I hosted myself. And I thought I'd love to get Sachin along. He lives in Mumbai, and he accepted the invitation to come along. We cut a birthday cake and had a chat and a cup of tea, and it was a really nice evening with three of us together with his wife. And that's documented in the book. We've got a portrait of Vasant Raj and one of Sachin without his shoes on, which I don't think I've ever seen before. And it's quite unique because my wife saw the picture and she said, she summed it up really well by saying, that's not Sachin Tendulkar, that's actually Sachin, the person.
Yeah.
And you don't often see that. Because,
that's so true.
Yeah, it's just him and his natural element, nice and relaxed. And it's one of my favourite photos in the book.
Fantastic. Now, are you planning on doing any more of these sort of series, maybe in different countries or further
into it? Yeah, I'd love to capture one of Australia, the spirit of cricket in Australia, and visit all places. Obviously, logistically, it's a lot harder, and we're not playing cricket quite as much as India, where you can go any day of the week and find a game. So it'd be a bit more challenging. But I'd certainly love to do that and potentially do one in the UK or the West Indies, and even countries like Nepal and Bhutan, who they really love cricket, and it's a bit different. So yeah, if I can find the funding, and Canon were amazing initially. They funded the whole project, Canon, which have been a huge supporter of mine over the years. So it does take a lot of people to make these sort of things happen.
Well, you've got the good gear now, so you've got to use it, right?
It is good gear. It must be good gear because it made my photographs look okay.
There are some like amazing little stories in this book, but one thing that really stood out to me was the cricketing monks.
Oh, and they I love were this.
Like facing cricket balls, as you say, and getting hit all over the body and just being like withstanding it, and it's nothing, and they just move on. What was that like?
Yeah, look, it made me feel a bit inadequate, really, because I was looking at them going, they're going to ask me to bat here, surely. I don't really want to go out there because we're playing a field that's very uneven, but the backdrop was amazing, the Himalayas with the snow on it and monks playing cricket. It was pretty surreal, and but they were charging, and I think I was trying to impress me because, you know, they wanted to showcase their skills. So the bowls are full pace, and balls just deviating off the undulations, often into the shins or the thighs. And then one guy suddenly went for a cover drive and it leapt off a length and hit him on the cheekbone. I thought, well, that's definitely a broken cheekbone. He's off to the hospital here, but didn't even flinch. And went up to about 10 minutes later, this big lump on his cheek, and they were all laughing about it. So, they're way tougher than me. I eventually had a bat and sort of wimped out a bit, but look, it was good fun, and it was something I never thought I'd do, and to be amongst it, I sort of had to take a couple of seconds just to think about, you know, what a privilege it was.
Amazing. Steve, we probably won't take up too much more of your time. We just might play a quick game with you, if that's okay.
Yes, and also say that the book comes out...
Oh, we'll get to that, Gabby.
Oh, great.
I'm a professional, mate.
You are.
I look forward to the game. I've got no idea what game I'm getting in.
Oh, you're going to love this one.
This
you're going to
be interesting. It's called...
The line might drop out, I hope. Yeah.
How well does Steve Waugh know Steve Waugh? This is going to be my favourite game. Never.
Okay. A lot of pressure here, Steve. A lot of pressure.
So I'm feeling sweating already.
Oh, good.
Okay, Steve Waugh, who was your last one-day international against?
Oh, boy. I'd say that it'd be South Africa.
Bit easy, that one.
All right, Steve Waugh.
I took a lot of thinking, don't worry.
All right, question number two. How many books have you written?
Well, 13 previous. This is my 14th, so 13.
Oh, you're correct. You know yourself well.
So far, so good, yeah.
Can you remember the last way you got out in a one-dayer?
Boy, if you said test, it would one-dayer. I think it might be obscure. I might say run out.
No, I think you were bold. I think. But, I mean, I'm going to believe whatever you say.
I don't know. I know how I got it in the last test. I was caught by Sachin Tendulkar. So I know that one. But I don't know the one day. Yeah.
Okay.
How many wickets did Steve Waugh take yourself in test cricket? Easy one.
It's an easy one. 90, 92.
Yeah.
This isn't part of the quiz, but did you ever think, because you came in as an all-rounder, were you ever like, oh, I want to stay an all-rounder, or were you just that good of a batter that?
No, I wanted to stay an all-rounder, but I realised that bowling actually hurts and you get a few injuries, so I went for the other option. But I love my bowling because it took my pressure off my batting, and it's one thing I really missed. But then I became captain, and I thought, well, I can't really be injured as a captain, so it sort of stopped my my bowling towards the end, but it was something I love doing.
All right, one more question, I reckon.
Yeah, yeah, go okay. for it.
Can you remember how many times you got out hit wicket in one day internationals?
Mm.
Boy, well, I know I did. Joel Garner put me through my stumps once, and I stood on my stumps then. That's one. I'll just go one. I can't remember any of the time, but I did.
Yeah, once is right. Once is correct.
Yeah, this is a lot of pressure. I can't take too much more of this.
I feel like there have been a lot of one day eight questions. I'm going to ask one test one. Best test bowling figures.
My best test bowling? 5 for 28 off 22.3.
Oh, and you know
have
the
you got
overs.
Your stats in front of you? Are you no, have you got your Wikipedia this, page up?
I remember all my bowling stats. Batting, I don't remember all of that. Bowling,
wow.
And you don't do a lot of that. Bowling always is sort of pretty special, yeah.
All right, Steve Ward, this has been an absolute delight and privilege, and no one will ever believe it happened, so I'm glad I recorded it. Your book, The Spirit of Cricket India, will be available from November 1, but if you're sneaky enough, you can jump on to steveward.com and grab an early bird offer. You can also catch him on cricket, Capturing Cricket, Steve Ward, in India, Tuesday, November 17 at 8:30 p.m. Steve, thank you so much.
Thank you, Steve.
And best of luck with the book.
Good on you. Thank you.
Take care.
Thanks, Steve.
Bye.
Bye.
Wow.
Oh, my God.
That was Steve Ward.
I've never seen you so nervous, Joel.
Yeah, just literally, I can see the sweat dripping down his legs.
I had to stand up a few times because I could, my pants are full of bricks. Yeah. That's how nervous I was.
You did very good. It's nice to meet your heroes and they be so fantastic.
He was so lovely.
What a legend.
Thank you so much,
He's
Steve.
The sort of guy that you could definitely just spend, a long time just chatting to.
Oh, yeah.
Pretty amazing.
Yeah, absolutely. And obviously he's doing a lot of interviews and probably promoting the book a lot, but to give time to us, a little community radio show, really amazing.
Pretty epic. So, to be honest, guys, everyone, I didn't really know anything about Steve Ward, and when you said we were interviewing, but, we got given a preview of the book, and so last night I was looking through the images, reading all the blurbs, and getting a real nice snippet of who he is as a person and his history and the history. I was really into it. I loved it. So
yeah,
he's always just been so great and lovely, and
I'm sure
amazing.
There's a lot of questions that people would have been dying for us to ask.
I had more questions I wanted to ask.
Me too.
Joel had about 100 written down.
I mean, one of the questions I said, how many times have you wanted to punch Warnie? So
we could have gone down that path. But when I told
we were too respectful.
When
we
I told,
were so proper.
Oh yeah, I know.
We were very.
I when
What's
I told my
your...
wife I was going to interview Steve Waugh the other day, she again today said, oh, when are you talking to Shane Warne? And I was like, what? Is that the same person? Like, no.
It's an alias.
Yeah.
Did you have a question that you wanted to ask?
I wanted to ask him about when he was a captain of Australia, he used to put on the wall of the dressing room, no regrets. And it's a mantra for me that meant so much when I saw what it meant for the team. But it's actually something that I've just sort of taken on since then as well. Like, no regrets. Like, just live your life.
That's not a question. That's just you just reliving a memory. I'm so glad
yeah,
you
Yeah, probably.
That.
Shut up.
But at the end, he goes up.
So I was going to, but I was going to, I hadn't finished the question. I was going to ask him if that was something that he, has always lived by, like a mantra that,
What is just so funny is that we've got this sort of, questions, all these questions. Joel's just gone in there, and it's like every single question he could have ever thought to ask him is just down there. But they're all like, who's your heroes? Who do you look up to? Oh my God, I love you.
Pretty much.
Do you remember this time? Do you remember this test?
Do you remember this time? Do you remember this time? Do you want to go for a beer with me?
I'm not going to lie. That I may have asked that. I don't remember. That all happened really quick. I may have told him I loved him. I don't know.
I think you did at the start.
I think you did.
Okay, that's fine. That's fine. I wanted to ask him about the red handkerchief that he used to wear in his back pocket every time he played.
Oh, do we not know anything about that?
Which, there's things have been written about it before. But
guys, we've got his number. Let's call him back.
We'll call him back.
But by the end of his career, it was like so small because he had to keep on chopping it up because it was like getting ripped and torn and falling apart. And he would use his little red cloth to wipe the sweat off his brow.
Or tamper with the ball. Just
kidding. I'm glad you didn't bring that up.
Wow.
Both of your jaws just dropped.
Cut her mic off.
Yeah. That's
Bye.
A controversial.
Yes, it is very controversial.
Is that why you put me in this studio? So you could turn me down? Because both of you were like, you're going in the other studio. Don't say anything stupid.
All right. Well, normally we finish the show with a game. We're not going to do that because we've obviously done the game.
Yeah. How do we finish then?
Well, we're done. We'll do some sport. We're not done.
Sport, yes.
Shall we talk sport? Yes. I mean, I've got a little bit.
Yeah, let's do it.
So,
sport!
So, in the NRL, it's like peeling off a Band-Aid, mate.
Yeah.
I'll do it really quick. The Raiders and Rabbits stay alive for another week after both winning their Week 2 finals matches. It was the Raiders who got through first, winning a rematch of last year's grand final, although Gabby thought it was actual replay of the game, beating the team that got them last year, the Roosters. No more three-peat, no more of this. It's all done now.
You know the last team that did a three-peat was?
Para.
Of course.
Yeah.
So we keep that record intact. Thank you.
It's like...
Shut up. We've only won 4 premierships and 3 of them in a row. Like, that's pretty good.
That's pretty good, yeah.
Yeah. But yes, and then we lost. And yes, we're out of the finals. Move to the next bit.
We haven't got to that bit yet. Souths are into their third prelim in as many years after beating Mix Eels. Eels looked to have the game in their hands at the end of the first half, but missed conversion from Mitch Moses led to a try.
Oh, you love rubbing that in, don't you? Because you don't like Mitch Moses.
Sorry, what?
Yeah, right.
Just because he goes missing.
When you talk about game turners, like a penalty kick that he should have nailed hits the post and then they score off it, like it just blows my mind that could even happen.
It's a big turnaround because they get 8 points in front rather than you being.
We would have been 20 on.
Guys, I can't believe we just interviewed Steve Waugh and then now we're just spending all this time talking about bloody NRL.
It's all right, it's almost over. But the one thing that really got me in that bit is Damien Cook didn't get sent to the bin, and I'm sure he should have been.
Yep.
Because he tackled a player who was trying to get up and play the ball in front of the post. Mm-hmm. That's, as far as I'm aware, bad.
Yeah, look, it was a big controversial decision, and everyone in the crowd was pretty pissed off.
I bet.
Maybe if he'd been get sent off, maybe we would have got the kick.
Maybe he wouldn't have kicked it because you're down a player. Why not go for the kill?
Go for the try.
Yeah.
So many what ifs in that game.
The prelim final start tonight with the Storm taking on the Raiders at Suncorp, while the Panthers take on the Bunnies tomorrow night. Both winners playing the grand final.
Yeah.
Okay, tennis. Oh. I mean, it's almost becoming a natural thing to say now, but Dylan Alcott has won the French Open quad wheelchair title yet again, beating Annie Lapthorne 6-2, 6-2. It's Dylan's 11th quad singles Grand Slam triumph.
Rafa wins again.
So do you like Rafa or Federer better, Gab?
Nick Kyrgios. actually, I think I like Rafa.
Yeah. I mean, apart from his little tics that he has, you know, when he very serves, he pulls his bum, touches his ear, he touches his nose.
I think that's like juju thing, you know.
But if you start focusing on that, it just really puts you off. Like, as a fan, like, you go, just stop. But as we just now know, Rafa...
Didn't you ever do that? Like, when before you do, like, you, like, pull your socks up a certain way, do your laces a certain way,
I am the least superstitious. I'm the least superstitious person there is. I don't. I mean, I believe in ghosts, but I don't believe in... I don't believe in sports.
Oh, okay, then.
Oh, wow.
No, but I think that Rafa and Federer have this, like, really great relationship. It's like they're the biggest rivals in all sporting history. You know, they smash it. I don't know. It's really cute. Their relationship is
well,
so
they've
sweet.
Now both won 20 Grand Slam titles. Yep. So, yeah, they're tied.
Rafa's 13th French Open claim. So, pretty good. Pretty cool.
Very. In AFL... The Richmond Tigers thrashed St Kilda 80-49 on Friday night.
Goxie was going to get a St Kilda tat if St Kilda
won.
That's
right,
And so, Goxie, if you're listening, no tat this time.
Lucky you. Or unlucky. Then the Cats said, hold my beer, and really hammered the Magpies 100-32 on Saturday night. Tonight, Port Adelaide will play Richmond, and tomorrow night, Brisbane will take on the Cats. Both winners, of course, go through to the grand final.
Mm-hmm.
Lakers
won the NBA.
Almost as Justin Hamilton predicted, but it was 4-2 instead of 4-1.
I thought he said 4-0.
Well, he said 4-0 or 4-1. Like, okay. He said either, and now it was actually 4-2.
There you go. Yeah. Justin Hamilton can predict.
But now the goat off is being decided. I think LeBron wins.
Well, I think so. I think it's just clear.
When you win 4 titles with 4 different teams...
It's pretty good, isn't it?
Guys, what's goat again? I know, but just for everyone else listening.
It's like it's a little animal. It starts as a kid.
And they follow NBA stars around.
You haven't seen a goat play basketball. You're missing out. Greatest of all time.
Yeah. Thanks. Yep. Just checking. Just seeing.
Hey, we do finish
again. Well, look, that's the end of the game. Also, the Bledisloe Cup first game happened. Somehow Australia tied 16-16 against New Zealand. They haven't won there in 19 years. It's unbelievable.
And still haven't.
It still happened, but pretty close.
We didn't lose.
We didn't lose. All right, that's the end of the show.
If you've just tuned in, we were just interviewing Steve Waugh, and if you missed it, go on iTunes, Spotify, all the places you can podcast, and you will listen to an epic interview with the previous captain cricket team.
We joke a lot here. Well done. We joke a lot on this show. That's not a joke. Steve Waugh was on this show.
It took us 100 episodes to actually get a really proper sports guest on that.
I mean, this is now we're in the next 100.
Yeah.
What's 102 going to be?
How do we top it? Oh, next week.
We didn't even tell him about our century.
Well, I tried to bring it up at the beginning.
Oh, yeah.
Damn it.
Next time.
Yes, hello and welcome to One Last Thing. It is that time again on a Friday evening. Let's do one last thing together. My name is Mitch Byatt. Tonight on the show, dear oh dear, what a week Gladys has had. Marielle's her biggest supporter on this show, at least in the last few weeks, is going to give his read on her big week in the old mate take. He's going to stick on and tell me just why my sporting career will be over. I've got some very tough decisions to make. And we'll hear from Tom Roachy Roach, our future correspondent, our man in the sky, in the crystal eight ball. Let's see what he's got for us this week and a couple of great tunes as well. Let's get started. You're on 2SER 107.3.
Like, how do you do when you said, oh, I'm fine? Then straight you are, you look like a star. When I saw you smile, and it was like the moon, your eyes light up the room, and I had to ask why. You were all alone and come on your own, cause you look too good to be true. My eyes are glued and stuck on you, and if you wanna do what they're doing and do, let's do it, let's do it. I said you look too good to be true. My eyes are glued and stuck on you, and if you wanna do what they're doing, then do. Well, let's do it, let's do it, let's do it. Said you went from out of town, just there for the weekend. It was nice to meet you. Hold up, how about I show you around and let me know if you're down? And you said, oh, okay, let's cut to the chase. You wanna take me back to your place? Well, let's do it, let's do it. Cause you look too good to be true, and my eyes are glued and stuck on you. And if you wanna do what they're doing and do, let's do it, let's do it. I said you look too good to be true, and my eyes are glued and stuck on you. And if you wanna do what they're doing and do, let's do it, 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 let's do it.
Yeah, I knew your face, but didn't know your name. Didn't know if you were keen or you were playing a game. You had a couple of characters in hot pursuit. I checked them out and then decided they were not for you. I knew the kind of guy you needed by the way you were seated. Legs crossed like you got it and you wanted to keep it. Had a fire in your eyes like you can't be defeated. Went the princess type and you knew how to be treated. So we chatted about the fact that I teach the guitar. You said you wanted lessons and were eager to start. And from the first second I was seeing a spark, I felt the whole room bumping in the beat of my heart. The night moved on and before too long, we were sitting in the park and you put the moves on. Yeah, the way that I remember it, you kissed me first. Must have been the pill we had was starting to work. You stole the bubble gum from under my tongue, and I was love struck with this little bottle of fun. Let's do it, must have been something I said. Ended up seeing the sunrise from my bed.
Let's do it, 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 let's do it. My eyes are glued and stuck on you. And if you wanna do what they're doing and do, let's do it, let's do it. I said you look too good to be true. My eyes are glued and stuck on you. And if you wanna do what they're doing and do, let's do it, 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 let's do it. Let's do it, let's do it, let's do it, let's do it, let's do it.
our Radiothon is back. October 19 to 31. Subscribe to help Sydney thrive. 2SER.com.
You are tuned to One Last Thing at 2SER's very own budget tonight show with me, Mitch Byatt. The first thing we do on One Last Thing is catch up with our good friend Murray Olds for the old mate take. Murray, you have been singing the praises of Gladys Berejiklian for as long as Rona's been ravaging this country and the world for that matter. You're a big team captain on Team Gladys, but she's not had a great week for a lot of reasons. Wow. Now, is what's happening still up in the air? But what's your overall read on who's this shady guy that's appeared? Like, what's the story? What's going on?
Well, like everybody, her mum and dad didn't know, her siblings didn't know that she was in this relationship with this dirtbag. I mean, it came. I was in the newsroom this week, and the news came out that Gladys is testifying at ICAC into the dodgy business dealings, a shady, allegedly dodgy and allegedly shady business dealings of a disgraced ex-MP from Wagga Wagga, a bloke, Darryl Maguire, who really didn't make a bloody, he was in their parliament for, 15, 16 years, didn't make a bloody ripple. I mean, please, no one had heard of this little country bumpkin. And yes, I swear to tell the truth, whole truth, nothing but the truth. I was in a secret relationship with Mr. Maguire for 5 years. What? I thought Gladys, like everybody else, thought Gladys was married to the job.
Yeah.
It was a complete... Everybody was blindsided, Mitch. No one could get their head around Gladys and good on her having a relationship. She was fell in love. Malcolm Turnbull said summed it up for me this week. He said Gladys fell in love with the wrong guy.
Yeah.
And that's what's happened. And please, those without sin, get the bag of rocks and let's start chucking. Because... everybody has a hiccup in their love life along the way. Well, you know, you're very lucky. Mm. Many people have hiccups in their relationships, in their love life, and it's never comfortable. It's never happy. But boy, oh boy, if you do your nuts on someone, if you fall madly in love, you give your heart to them. Hell's bells. It's pretty hard when that breaks down, doesn't it?
Yeah, that's right. And I guess some of the questions being asked is, you know, what did she know? Because I think this guy hasn't, I don't think Darryl Maguire has been proven to do anything illegal or bad yet. But he does sniff a little bit.
By his own admission, though, Mitch, he admitted this week in evidence, he told ICAC, yes, and don't forget ICAC, please. They've got tape recordings, they've got documents, they've got emails. You don't get this far without having a truckload of evidence. Maguire himself confessed this week, yes, on many occasions, multiple occasions, thousands and thousands of dollars cash delivered to his parliamentary office. Ding, wah-wah, that's not legal. And by the way, he had parliamentary staff working on his private businesses. Wah-wah, that's not legal either. So he's in a world of pain, and he's, you know, the evidence that he's put forward for himself, dreadful. You know, so at least on that level of criminality, if you can put it that way. I'm not a lawyer, but man, it looks pretty bad for him. But what about the personal side of this with his relationship with Berejiklian? Mm. I mean, if this is the best she can do, the poor woman, she's been dudded big time by a dirtbag. Because in evidence yesterday to the ICAC, Thursday, I'm just looking at my notes here. Yes, it was an on-again, off-again relationship. If that's the best you can do when you've been sleeping with the Premier of New South Wales, she's the modern-day Joan of Arc, this woman, and this rat bag sums up the relationship in that way, I think, by Jesus, Gladys, you can do better than him.
She may
look, what you say is correct. Everyone is asking questions about what did she know and when did she know it. And she knew enough 2 years ago to insist this guy quit the parliament and get out of Dodge, leave the Liberal Party. That's what she knew. And yet she, by her own admission, she kept the relationship going for another 2 years. And you watch the public at this point, for me, again, is behind her. They know what she's done, Mitch. You and I have discussed this in the past. Mm. Head and shoulders, the best political leader in Australia. Through the bushfires, through the drought, she's guided the state of New South Wales. This state is as big as New Zealand, right? A bit bigger, actually, in population. And now Corona's come along. She is a woman of substance. And she's a woman of integrity. And until there's something criminal lodged against her, what's she accused of? Having bad judgment in men. You know what I mean?
I think
for me, I'm giving it the benefit of the doubt, Mitch.
I think whenever these things, I mean, whether that's the right way to spin it, she's been unlucky in love. I think whenever a politician is humanized in that way, it definitely allows the public to kind of see them more as a human rather than just kind of robot living in Parliament House. So I think maybe if the public goes along with her, I think she should be all right.
I like the way you summed that up. It has humanized her. All of a sudden, she's gone from being this robotic political leader with no private life to, hang on a second, she did have a secret private life. Mm-hmm. And at this point, I've not heard any cabinet ministers saying, well, she's got to go. Maybe someone is counting her numbers. But I tell you what, those bloody anonymous suits standing behind her at news conferences, not one of them's fit to open the door of a car.
That's true. There it is. The biggest take of the news this week, especially in Sydney, Mariella. It's going to hang around for a bit. There's another very pressing issue I want to get you across as well.
Mate, happy to hang around. I'm with you, pal.
Welcome back to One Last Thing on a Friday evening. Hope you've had a great week and geared up for a fantastic weekend. We're still joined by the old mate, Mariel. So he's given us his biggest take in the news of the week, but now he's here on a more of a personal mission for me. He's the kind of person I always go to for advice. And this time, Mari, I'm going to come to you.
What have you done?
Now, right now, we're speaking to each other via a video link as we're doing this show, and you can see that I've got a mini cast on my pinky finger.
Oh man, a digital industry. Yeah. Injury.
It's a poly mallet fracture on my pinky finger on my right hand. Now,
so little finger's got a what fracture? A poly mallet fracture.
I don't know what that means. That's the fancy name the doctor gave it to it. But essentially, I've caught.
Poly is multiple, right? You've broken it in several places.
Maybe. I don't know. I didn't really press too much on the detail from it. I just was just happy to get this and get out of it.
What did you do?
Well, you know, as you can imagine, I've not got the most scintillating sporting career, but I was just having a bit of a kick around with a footy with a couple of mates a few weeks ago. And this is early on in the piece, and I tried to catch a ball and it really hurt my finger. And I didn't think much of the time, kept playing. That night it was throbbing, and I figured because it's the pinky finger, you know, it's not a big deal. So I left it for a couple of weeks and the swelling wasn't really going away. And then the skin started peeling away for it. And I thought, something's not right here. I should go and get this checked out. So I walked into the doctor, I show her, and she goes, oh, that's deformed. You've got to go get an x-ray straight away. So it turns
out it's deformed.
So it turns out I'd fractured my finger that afternoon and just let it sort of fester for a couple of weeks. And so I've got to wear this little silly little cast on my pinky finger for 5 weeks. And so
was there an infection or just a bad break that wasn't attended to immediately?
What it was is a bit of bone, and this might be the poly mallet distinction, is a bit of bone sort of swimming around the top of the finger. So the guy had to sort of push it back into place and just sort of put the splint on it. So that's why I can't bend my finger backwards kind of thing. So
Did you have to have a dental anesthetic?
No, this is all done on like a Saturday afternoon. Like, no, I was a bit hungover at the time as well, which definitely would have numbed the pain, I'm sure.
Mitch.
So that's the current state of things, right? And the last time I kind of played, you know, in teams, but I broke my leg several years ago being a goalkeeper. So my question is to you, I love team sport. I think it's a great form of exercise. I love the kind of camaraderie of it. But every time I go out and do something, I seem to be falling to pieces. So my question is to you, do I just give up sport completely, just consider my best days are behind me, or do I just sort of persevere and just sort of keep going? What's your read? Do you have any similar experiences?
Well, gee whiz. I mean, look, you haven't had the luckiest sports career, have you?
No.
But I've known you for a good long while now, and I know how much team sport does mean to you. Mm. It's a big part of your life. Saying goodbye to it would be bloody tough. I'm just imagining for you it would be very difficult. It's part of your life.
Mm.
And a bit the bride is keen to see you out of the house with your footy boots and the way it gives her some time with the kids and all of that. But if you're getting to the point, I mean, we all have to reach a point in our life where we understand there are some things we can't do. My point came, I was 30, how old? Oliver was just born, so I must have been 33, 34, and I'm on air down in Adelaide. I was doing the breakfast show on 5DN and being a motor mouth. Oh, I'm from New Zealand, I love playing rugby. I got a phone call one day after I came off air. I forget his name now, but he was the captain of the Woodville Warriors is my memory. He said, listen, Motormouth, you're such a big shot. What about coming out to play for the Woodville Warriors?
Oh, you got
I said, sure, poached. Baby, it wins training. He says, as a matter of fact, we're training tonight. And so I said, right. Went home to see Annie, and she said, you're a bloody idiot. But anyway, I went and actually bought some football boots and went out that night to training. The bloke who called me, turns out, is a surveyor from the Barossa Valley. And surprise, surprise, he's 6 foot 10 and weighs about 80 kilograms. He plays in the second row. It could hurt your neck to look up at him. And he said, right, let's see what you can do. Well, of course, I was bloody hopeless. But so they put me out, you know, second five in the back line somewhere in this rugby team. And anyway, went out the first game on a Saturday afternoon, and he was there. And Oliver was a babe in arms. Got through the first week. Boys love beers, and it was great fun. Wonderful fun to get out of the house in the evening. I could talk about it on air like a big bloody idiot. The next weekend, second weekend, and we're supposed to be over 35s. It was like a golden oldies thing. I was breaking the rules by being 34.
Ah, the spring chicken.
I come out against, here's a kid who's about 22, twice my size, and I'm marking him. Well, the first bloody tackle, I thought I'd broken my arm. And I said to Skipper, I said, Skip, because I couldn't move my left arm. He says, oh, look, you'll be right. Swap with a fullback. So he's put me out at fullback. I'm running around like this, buddy, with one arm. My wife is screaming from the sideline, get off, you idiot, get off. You can't catch a ball. And so the ball's coming out. I'm trying to catch with one arm. Half time couldn't come soon enough. I never played another game after that. I was 34. So what I'm saying to you is you have to assess. I made an instant assessment with the help of my lovely wife on the sideline. You're an idiot. You're not playing again. And I never did. Because she could see physically I wasn't up to it. I'm playing against much younger people, and you can get hurt. Because there is a life beyond football. Have sport. You can go surfing. Mm. You can do body surfing. You can take up golf, and I'd be happy to show you around a golf course.
That would be nice. But we should do that one day.
I'd love to do that because golf for me is my principal sporting relaxation now. I love it, but I'm a different age to you, pal, and you may not be ready for it. But that's a discussion you're going to have. If you're going to keep breaking things, you're going to reach a point where you say, as I reached that point, the only advice I'd give you, have a discussion first with the family, and if you think you've another season in you, get the boots back on, because it's such fun. When you're part of team sport, you know how good it is.
Yeah.
It's bloody great. You know, you have a narrow win or even get thumped 10-0, doesn't matter. A couple of beers afterwards in the dressing sheds. Oh, you see that tackle I made? Oh, how good was it? Oh, what about the save?
Yeah.
It's wonderful fun.
Yeah. Wonderful. So what you're saying is broaden my horizon. So if I take up something like checkers, I should be all right.
Oh, checkers. I think you'd be bored with checkers. Find another sport. And golf, well, you and I can have a lot of fun playing golf.
See you on the green. Mariels, thank you very much, sir.
Good on you, Mitch. Have a wonderful week.
Boogie down, everybody, just let your body move. Cause when we play our music, you know you're gonna groove. Getting down in the morning, getting down in the noon. When you hear the sound of Mother Jolte, you shake your body soon. Just shake your body to the left, and then shake it to the right. Cause when we play our music, you know we're down on mic. So everybody say, shake, 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 shake.
Bye. All right, y'all, get down, y'all. All right, y'all, say what, y'all. All right, y'all, get down, y'all. All right, y'all, say what, y'all. A boogie down, everybody, just let your body move. Cause when we play our music, you know you're gonna groove. Get down in the morning, get down in the noon. When you hear the sound of money choking, you shake your body soon. Just shake your body to the left, then shake it to the right. Cause when we play our music, you know we're out of sight.
Radiothon is back. Check that out. October 19 to 31. Subscribe to help Sydney thrive. 2ser.com.
Bloody things late again.
You are tuned to One Last Thing at 2SER's very own Budget Tonight show with me, Mitch Byatt. And around this time every week, we have a look at what the future holds with our future correspondent, Tom Roachy Roach. How are you, Roachy?
G'day, Mitchy. I'm well, thanks, mate. How are you?
Yeah, I'm delightful. Thanks for asking, man. So I feel like we're doing this segment for a long time. We've bounced around different times in the future. What do you have for us today?
Oh, we've got a big one today, Mitchy. I can hear your excitement already.
Well, yeah, I'm ready.
So do you want me to get into it or what?
Oh, let's just pad out for a bit more. No, I'll get into it.
All right. Well, Mitch, I have really done it this time. I've pushed the 2SER journalistic time machine to its limits. So far in this segment, we've been a couple of hours into the future. Days, years, millennium. Well, I've done a millennium time travel again, actually. But this time, I've gone even further than the last time. The year is 4020. A year that will tickle the hearts of rugby league fans and meat pie enthusiasts alike. A year that, if reversed, would be 2040. And that is meaningless and also incorrect if you think about it. But what I'm seeing here will blow your underdeveloped infantile mind. What I'm seeing here will bend your understanding of the concept of life. It will alter your state of mind, your consciousness. It will make you one. It will make you whole. It will shift the meaning of reality to a new meaning, one that is different to its current meaning. The colours, the sounds, everything feels so soft. I mean, I haven't felt this way since I was at Moody Rudy's nudist retreat. Book now for 25% off hula hooping and bareback horse riding. But I mean it, Mitch. 4020 is incredible. Everything has kind of slowed down. I can see clearly. I have the answers. I have the answers to some of those questions like, how deep is your love? Should I stay or should I go? Wouldn't it be nice? What's love got to do with it? And how much is that doggy in the window? What I'm experiencing now is what I can only imagine Donald Trump feels every time he posts a tweet. Utter euphoria and orgasmic relief. Now, actually, hold on a sec, Mitch. My assistant is just saying something. Just give me a tip. Yes?
Oh, I didn't know you had an assistant. Wow, okay.
What's that, mate? Mushrooms? How many? So we didn't time travel this week? I'm just high. I'm high on psychedelics. Oh, shit. Mitch is going to be pissed. Mitch, are you still there?
Yeah, we're here. The whole of Sydney's listening.
I mean, where is there? Who is there?
Oh, wow.
look, mate, looks like something's come up.
Oh.
I feel like I'm talking to a pink elephant, my hands the size of watermelons. But just so you know, 4020 is pretty wild, man.
Wow, I really feel like we got a peek behind the curtain there and really saw how the sausage is made of future correspondence there. Make sure you say hi to your assistant for us, Roachie. But okay, it sounds like we really learned a lot this week.
Yeah, I'm learning a lot about myself right now. I don't even know who I am anymore.
Okay. Make sure you go to a nice, safe, warm place and surround yourself with positive people. Roachie, is the advice I have for you.
Thank you, whoever you are.
All right. Well, we might leave it with Roachie there as he kind of comes through the fourth, fifth, and sixth dimension of his own personal psyche. Roachie, hope you're okay. Be careful, and we'll speak to you next week.
I'll be fine. Thanks a lot, Mitch. Talk to you then.
Songwriter Lisa Caruso has been a stalwart of Sydney's music scene for some years now. Her long-awaited debut record, In Feelings, is a 2SER feature album. A captivating storyteller, Lisa's songwriting is emotionally piercing, euphoric at times, despairing at others, but always with a bold honesty and heart-on-sleeve approach. In Feelings by Lisa Caruso, the feature album on 2SER 107.3. Stories, ideas, music.